Hey guys, welcome back. It's Joe at Archery World.
Henry Bass here.
And we're going to talk today about arrow rest for target indoor season. We're going to talk about a variety of the different styles that are out there. We're also going to talk about how each of us implement them into our game when we're shooting inside. So Henry, let's get right into it. When you're shooting indoors, I know you love shooting a blade. Explain blade rest to anyone that might not know what that is, and then we can go into the details about that, and then I'll kind of talk about some of the fallaways out on the market as well.
So the biggest thing with a blade rest is it's always up. It's always stationary, so you're typically going to get guidance all the way through the shot. It's a little bit more critical as far as making sure that your bow's tuned properly or simple things like that, just because you do get a little bit more pinging or things like that when your veins hit the arrows. And then there's different stiffnesses to the blades as far as adjustments and things like that. Different qualities in each blade rest. I just personally have always liked one a little bit better. I felt like out of my setups, I always get a little bit more forgiveness out of them, but that's just personal preference.
Yeah, so what rest are you shooting right now?
I'm shooting the AAE Freak Show. It's the Jesse Broadwater version of the AAE rest. Everything's micro-adjustable, and then it takes their proprietary blades, and they're just a single hole with a hexagon or an octagon that lock in, so you can replace the blades on the fly without changing too much as far as the side-to-side position or anything like that.
Yeah, so I like that, because if you have to change a blade in the competition, you can just take a screw out off of the center of that post and then remove it and put a new one on there, and it's got the minimal changes to that. There's a few on the market that are like that. I personally like that one a lot. I also like the Swap from Spot Hog. That one's a neat one because it's got a proprietary setup where it's got one base that attaches to the bow, one arm that attaches to the bow, and then you can switch heads around for different diameter arrows for indoor, outdoor. You can take it off if you feel like it's fragile when you're traveling somewhere to a competition, so you're less likely to bend a blade in place too. Now, with your arrow setup that we were talking about last week, you shoot a 27 diameter Black Eagle, and you shoot a lot of weight up front as well. Let's talk about the weight that you shoot up front and then how that affects what spring blade that you want or the thickness of the blade that you need for that specific setup.
So I'm shooting a 200 grain point out of a 27. My arrow's pretty heavy. Typically, you would want to run a stiffer blade with that, but out of my personal shot style and setup, I found that I don't shoot the stiffer blades as well. The way I kind of relay the blade is it's kind of like a suspension system in a car. You're looking at, you know, every car drives different, every bow drives, you know, drives an arrow different. And so you just have to figure out which one drives that arrow the way that you want it to. And for me, throughout the last couple of years, I've played with 8,000s, 10,000s, and 12,000s. Very rarely do I shoot a 12,000. But a lot of your top guys that are shooting heavy arrows are all shooting 12,000. I typically, indoors, I run a 10, outdoors, I run an 8. Some years indoors, I run an 8. Just depends on, you know, setup and things of that nature.
Yeah, and so we're talking about the blade thickness, you know, how not wide that blade is, but how thick it is. So it's made of spring steel in this case. It's a really long launcher on an AAE Pro blade, so that makes that blade more flexible at the tip where it sits in that little snake's tongue launcher where your arrow sits in that. And I like how you're describing that. It's like a suspension on a car. So you want that arrow to stay in contact with the blade the entire shot process as long as it can possibly stay in contact with. And you want a smooth ride for the arrow. So you want the blade to do most of the work and flex rather than it chattering along it. I know you shoot for the diameter of an arrow that you shoot, I know you shoot a pretty narrow launcher. Are you shooting a standard size launcher for their blade?
Yeah, so they make three different sizes. They've got the real super skinny, that's for like X10s, deep impacts, X Impacts, VAPs, or gold tip pierces. Then they make a standard size blade that's going to be kind of for like your 23 diameter and smaller. And then they make a really wide version that's going to be for like 23s on up. And I've just always shot that medium size blade is just what I've always had really good luck with. I kind of contribute that back to the days when I shot trophy takers. And that was kind of all that was available at the time was just that standard width. And it's just something that I've kind of just continued on using and not really found a need to change.
Yeah, and well, and then your experience and how many tens of thousands of arrows you've drawn across a blade like that matters too, because some people, especially new shooters trying to get into the indoor target or even outdoor, struggle with drawing the bow back smoothly, and they cannot keep the arrow on the blade because they either kind of like jerk draw or they are nervous when they draw. And I know you have to kind of get over that to make it draw back smooth. The angle that you shoot that, meaning if you stood the blade straight up on its end, it would be 90 degrees, and you lay that, you start laying that down towards the target, your arrow's going to cradle in that blade to the point where if you lay it down too low, you'll start to run your veins into the bottom of the rest, or it will slip out of the groove. How do you choose what you want to do with that?
I try to run as shallow of an angle as I can while still getting clearance. Again, it kind of goes back to that suspension system that I was talking about. The more shallow you have that angle, the more flexible that blade is. As you start rising it up, then it stiffens that blade. And so it's got less function in my mind. So you see guys having them stand all the way up because that's what they get to get their arrows to stick on. You know, that's just not how I've shot mine. I like having it, you know, if I'm shooting a 10 thou, the way I've got mine set up is it almost reacts like an 8,000.
Yeah. Well, for sure. That's kind of what I was getting at too, is the more you lay it down flat, the weaker that blade becomes because now the arrow is further out on the end of the blade. And out of convenience and a little bit of security when they're drawing it back, I see a lot of people that are struggling with the blade chatter or inconsistent shots. They're running that up to make that blade hold their arrow better when they're drawing it back. But the consequence to that is that it causes the arrow to vibrate across or have chatter as it goes across, not to mention what we always kind of say in the shop too is it springboards. It's like running to the end of a diving board and taking one big bounce. Well, you can't control that bounce. It actually gets worse to a point. So I know that's one that really helps that smooth that out for you, doesn't it?
Yep, it does.
So I know we're going to be doing some YouTube videos as the weather permits and as we get our channel up and going. So all these things that we talk about on the podcast, we're going to relate to that by a video that you'll be able to refer to also. And we'll go over the setups for indoor and outdoor and everything too. So those are going to be coming. So if it's hard to track along, if you're not an avid indoor archery target shooter, sometimes these get a little bit deeper and confusing by listening to them. But a lot of times you're on the cusp of figuring it out and you might hopefully get some insight that'll help you there. As far as you said, you run the Freak Show from AAE. Do you run the long block on that or do you run the standard block?
I'm just using the standard. The long ones, really, if you're trying to get around the tech riser on the Hoyt, then you really need that long one just to get everything to kind of tune up when you're torque tuning and going down that path. I've never really, you know, I have messed with that a little bit on certain bows, but I have, you know, not enough that I felt it necessary that I needed that longer mount.
So that standard mount has about an inch of throw. Once you put the bolt through the burger button hole and you lock it down, you can slide that rest forward or backwards to position it where you want in accordance with the grip on the handle. So some people run it in what they would call an overdraw position where the edge of the blade where the arrow sits is running behind the hand grip on where you would hold. So there's an imaginary line that typically lines up with the hole that the rest screws in called the burger button, and it lines up with your grip at some point, the throat of the grip. So when you run yours, where in conjunction to that burger button and the grip?
So I'm pretty simple as far as where I put mine. All my rests are sitting where the tip of the blade is at the back of the riser. There's no science behind it. It's just kind of where I started putting them, and then they started shooting good. And so I found no reason to really change that. Now, it doesn't mean that over the course of the years I haven't played with torque tuning or pulling that in or out or this or that. But the reason why I like it there is when I'm shooting outdoors, I like to cut my arrows pretty short just to try to stiffen them up so I don't have to go to a stiffer spine to get a whole lot of weight and slow my setups down. So I typically run my rest to the back of the riser. So it's still, if I do overdraw it or anything like that, my point's still in the riser shelf versus in the back of my hand. And so that's just kind of where my comfort setup is. But like I said, you know, I shot the Supra Focus last year for a short period of time. That bow I needed to torque tune, and I found that my rest needed to go as far back as I possibly could. So that bow would have been a prime example of needing an overdraw on my rest versus just shooting a standard mounted rest.
Right. And so there's a reason they put those slots on the rest. It's typically so they'll have a little bit of give on the position that you do set it in relationship to that burger button and to the grip that you're holding the bow. Things that factor into that are mechanical torque on the bow. Since the cables on almost every bow made get pulled off to the side so that your arrow shaft and fletches can clear, that causes a certain amount of induced mechanical torque. Not to mention you as the shooter, you hold the bow a certain way, you draw it and anchor a certain way, you create another set of torque rules on it, you know, with dynamic torque, you know, at full draw, the cables come under load, it adds more pressure to the cables, that bow is going to react different and push the string different, the limbs are going to flex, all these factors come into play. So moving the rest in or out as you shoot allows you to maybe twist the bow right or left, or put a little bit of palm or heel into the bow so that you can kind of torque it in different directions as you're shooting to allow the arrow to move the least amount off of the line you're thinking you're sending it. And I know you had to do that with your past bow. The Citation that you just got, you're shooting it really good. You've not felt like you had to do that. You just went back to your standard, put it just at the back of the rest and call it good right now, and it's shooting lights out for you right now, right?
Yeah, I just kind of went to my home base setup, just set draw length, poundage, I just shoot a maxed out. Threw the rest on in my normal spot, just eyeballed everything, went over to paper, and shot a bullet hole. So then I was shooting it a little bit, noticed that I accidentally had my arrow running too low through the burger hole, and I was starting to get my veins hitting the shoot-through portion of the riser, made a small little tweak to that, and then just started running it, and it's been shooting really good ever since.
Yeah, so that's, you know, obviously that's good. Now, somebody at your level, sometimes it's confusing to, you know, me being an amateur or somebody else that's just getting started. They think, oh, if I just do what Henry does or what somebody else that's a pro does, then I should be successful. And if I'm not, it must be something wrong with the bow. That's not always the case. I mean, these are things that you're going to shoot good almost no matter what. That's why as a pro changes from one manufacturer to the other, they typically are still shooting as a pro. It's not like they have to learn to shoot a bow again. So they're still, you've got a skill level that's above the average person, and that helps you get to where you want to be faster because you give yourself honest feedback. You don't just think, okay, it's got to be there because that's where I like it. So being willing to change and tune the bow to what you need is essential for you, isn't it?
Right. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, the main difference between an amateur and a pro is the ability to kind of dissect things. Well, the second thing that I would say is pretty, you know, important to be a pro is just being honest with yourself. A lot of guys will go, man, that shot fired dead in the middle. And realistically, it did not fire dead in the middle. You portrayed it to be dead in the middle, but that's not where it fired. So when I'm going through these setups and I know they're not right, it's, you know, there's no sense in fighting it any more than I have to. So I'm not afraid that when I'm in practice, I'll just stop mid round and make an arrest adjustment, or I'll stop mid round and make a peep adjustment, or change my D loop position, or change state, you know, how my stabilizer is set up just a little bit, or just little things like that, just to get that bow to perform the way that I feel like it should based off of my current level where I'm at. If I haven't been practicing a whole lot, well, I just don't make changes. I ride it out for at least a month, and then I know, okay, now I should be back up to par, and I'm still seeing this. Now, if I've been shooting a whole lot like I have been this year, then I just go, okay, yep, I'm getting some blade contact or some vane contact on my riser. I'm going to make adjustment and just go on with my life, make that adjustment and move on to the next thing. With that vane contact, I was still shooting 29, 28Xs, but I know off personal experiences that that vane contact, when you're under pressure, just creates a rabbit hole of effects. You know, you start getting weird flyers and this and that because you're changing your torque load and your grip a little bit when you're under pressure. You might pull a little bit harder. You might be a little softer. You might not get your grip into the same spot. So it's all about setting everything, you know, getting a good foundation set up so that when you shoot perfect, the bow shoots perfect. When you shoot flawed, the bow still shoots good, but you kind of have to go through a checklist of items in order to get it in that that kind of segment area.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're mentioning that. A lot of people come into the local leagues, you know, the target leagues or wherever they happen to go shoot, you know, for their leagues. And they're afraid to make the setup for the league because they want to perform good during that league. You know, they want to kind of set a base and set a standard on who they are and, you know, how they're going to shoot that year, as they feel like that's their telltale of how I expect to shoot as I go to all the local shoots around the area. And pros think bigger than that a lot of times. They think of the national shoots. So they're not afraid to shoot five ends on a regular multicolor league and then stop. And they tweak their bow and they tune it. And, of course, they're going to miss their next shot most likely because they've just made a massive adjustment to their sight or their rest or their arrow turning the nock a little bit. So they're not concerned about whether they shoot a 300 or their if you're an amateur, if you're shooting a 295 or a 299 or a 300, they care about making the bow right for the bigger picture, which is that big competition. So if so the encouragement would be for people that comes in to shoot the league, use that as the opportunity to see how the bow's performing and make small adjustments to it during that without caring about score, without caring about anything else, and start to correct those things like that vane contact. Is a great example of how you're still shooting high X counts with it, but you know under pressure that would not work the same way because you've probably been through that and already experienced somewhere along the line something you accepted early in your career but made you pay in a big tournament when the pressure was on.
Yep. Yeah, I experienced it at Vegas of all places. I went shooting good, 28, 29 X games, felt confident, thought I was going to go in making shoot off, and the vane contact got the better of me. So, you know, among other things, Vegas is kind of its own animal. So there's a lot riding up on it, but I don't think that the vane contact helped, because when I got home, I started playing around with shifting grips and doing this. And the more contact that I got, the worse that arrow flight was. And when you're at a big tournament, you don't want to be focused on, well, I got to make sure that I'm doing this and doing that. And all, if my bow's not bubbled up a certain way, you just want everything to be as easy as possible. I just want to be able to pull back, look through my scope, notice that my sight's level, put the pin in the middle, start actuating through my shot. I don't want to have to worry about having to put left pressure on my grip or right pressure or more heel pressure or any of that. I just want it to be plug and play. And that's why you do all the practice in the world and all the leagues that you can and all the local shoots so that you can perfect that setup for how you shoot under pressure at a local setting in hopes that it still works that same way under a big tournament.
Yeah. And before we move on to followaways, I'll mention this as an amateur. So I had a bow about a year and a half ago that I got, and I thought I started shooting it, and I shot my first couple of rounds with it, and the grip naturally changed my wrist from a normal medium to low wrist grip that I normally have to a really high wrist grip, meaning that I was kind of felt like I had to flex my wrist to get it straighter to get that bow to shoot. Now, I shot in practice, and I'm not a 30X guy, you know, but I shot in practice a lot of 25 to 28Xs with that bow in a short period of time, and I felt like, man, this is a bow that's going to do well for me during my local shoots that I go to, and we have one that is a series that travels around the Northwest that we do, and we just call it the North Pacific Northwest Shoot-Up Tour, but I went to that shoot, and I had not, I don't even think I had shot anything less than a 299 with it. But I'd shot a lot of 300s, and I thought I was going to do pretty good with that. And that little, in practice, I could change my wrist grip, and it felt fine. Under pressure, I did exactly what I would always do. I went to the grip that I'm comfortable with under pressure, and as soon as I did that, shooting and qualifying, I shot my lowest score I'd ever shot in the tournament. I think I shot a 295, and it just devastated me. You know, I was so disappointed with it. And I just realized at that point, you can't adapt in such a short period of time to that type of grip and then expect to shoot it if you've not practiced under pressure too. And so it taught me the lesson of, I need to make sure I have a bow that's going to work for me with the grip I like. That there was nothing wrong with the bow. It was a me thing. And a lot of people get caught up in the bow thing. And I know you have had to, everybody has had to work through that at some point and be honest with themselves about it.
Yeah, you just have to be honest and figure out, is it you, is it the bow, is it the arrows can even play a factor into that. If you're running 2 weeks and things are working great in practice and then you go to a tournament and things are just sporadic, there's all sorts of variables into an actual setup per person, right? You could go get a generic bow setup done, and they're going to do, you know, like when we set up bows in the shop, we try to set it up to the best that we can for what we can and what we know about our customers, right? But at some point in time, like in a target setup, it takes that little bit of like, okay, I notice that this feels different, or I notice that this does this and this does that. Well, we in a shop can only set it up so much for right. that particular person. We can set the peep to where the peep's really good for them. We can put the D-loop and get everything tuned, but we can't tell that particular shooter what blade stiffness he needs based off of his right. shot style. We don't know, you know, if he's shooting a high wrist and we're shooting a low wrist, or he's shooting a little bit more side pressure or not. And so there's all those variables into an actual setup that you just have to kind of almost figure out for yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to, the shooter has to put in some work, right? So it can't just be, you know, I've got enough money to buy the X. You know, everybody wants that feeling, but the reality is that you as a shooter have to figure out your tendencies and figure out how you're going to work on them. And the guys that come into the shop, the ones that excel, they do. They figure it out. They make the changes. They go through that. And like I said, we're a retail shop, but we're not in the business of seeing how much we can sell to you just to sell it. That's not what we do. But if you look at my box of stuff and your box of stuff, I mean, we got a whole shop and our own stuff that we bought trying different things until we found what we liked. So it is kind of that same thing. Sometimes it works out from start to finish. Same guy doesn't have to change much and he excels, but most people will find they have to cut their arrows down, or the different tip weight that they didn't buy happens to work better because they've tried a different one now. Same thing when I was on the rifle team for the Marine Corps. The first bullet I ever loaded for long range did not work as good as what I have now, but I have all that stuff loaded up still that I, you know, don't use except for plinking because it's not the accuracy I want for what I found worked better.
Right. And that's the thing, is people think that as a sponsored shooter, I get all this stuff for free. We can go pull up my shop receipts. I spend about $2,000 a year in archery equipment experimenting with different stuff, trying to see if I can find that next level, or just figuring out if I can make myself a better shot with ease of equipment. Because sometimes equipment, changing a release from one release to the next, you might not clash with a release. And so, you know, that's why they make hundreds of different style releases, grip you know, they all feel different. They're not all the same release. So, you know, you shoot the stands because you like the adjustability and how they felt for your hand. I've shot Scotts for years. I liked how they felt. Now I'm shooting the True Ball. One feature that I really like about the True Ball is on like that Fulcrum Flex, I can adjust that third finger. I can either sweep it back, which I'm shooting it all the way kicked back, or I can curl it up and really hook onto my third finger on that. So there's just all these certain adjustments that you can do with all these releases on the market now. So you can really fine tune what fits best for you. Same as bows. Not one bows for the same person. I personally shoot a PSE, but you're shooting the Prime. That's just what fit your shot style, and the PSE citation's just what fit my shot style. Granted, I'm sponsored by them, but I wouldn't shoot their product if I didn't believe in it.
Right.
And that's how I've always been.
Yeah, same thing for me. It, you know, I love being able to just shop by the way a bow lays out on paper to me, and then knowing what I know about bows, it helps me figure out what bow I want to try that year and shoot it to. Now, not everybody's in a boat where they can get a bow every year like somebody in the industry, and we understand that, but you can always take a bow that's 10 years old and make it competitive with anything that's out there right now. The new stuff is just nice because there's different feels and feedbacks that it gives. One thing I'd like to talk about now is I'd like to talk about, we mentioned the blade rest and the different blade angles. I'd like to talk about fall away rests and on a target bow. I know I like shooting a fall away rest on mine, and I shoot the Hamsky Trinity Target Pro, and it is really forgiving for me. And I think a big reason that I like shooting the fall away over a blade, and I shot a blade for years. I prefer a blade if I could get it to shoot. But the reason I shoot a fall away is because I feel like at the end of my shot is where my form breaks down the most. When the arrow is getting pushed out of the bow, that last microsecond, that last 4 or 5 inches of travel before it releases from the string, if I make a mistake, I find that that mistake shows up there. And on a blade rest that stands up the whole time, I'll get a harder ricochet or that twang you're talking about off the spring, and I can hear that, and I already know it's coming because I already messed the shot up, but it makes the shot go worse for me. Now, playing with that blade angle makes it better and better, but the fall away tends to hide that mistake from me because the rest is already down and out of the way, and the arrow self-corrects instead of getting a secondary deflection.
Right.
So Hamsky does a good job for me on everything. The Trinity has that third bearing on the other end of the rest, so it gives that rest more structure and more a solid feel. It's really consistent. They've got like 5 different fiberglass blade options in different widths, and that helps with the different diameter arrows that you're going to shoot to. And then having it micro is almost always important. Everything I get in a rest, whether it's indoor, target, outdoor, whether it's hunting, is always going to be a micro-adjustable rest, because as I get back to distance, I like to tweak that rest a little bit to make it smoother, and that allows you to do that without having to guess when you loosen a screw and slip it and tighten the screw back down. It makes it more consistent.
Right. I've had experiences with dropaways. First time I shot one in a tournament was 2011. Had a failure, so then I went back to the standard blade rests, and I shot for Hamsky for a couple years when they very first came out, and I really loved their rest. I just didn't feel like I was a good value to their team because I wasn't going to shoot their rest the way that they designed it. I shot it in the locked up position, and I made the shoot off in Vegas 2 years in a row with that same rest locked up on the same bow, shot great, but to me, I just didn't feel like I was attributing to the team like I should have, and shooting it the way that they spent all the time engineering and designing that rest. So that's where I felt like when I moved to AAE, it was a good fit because they build really high quality blade rests, and that's just kind of the direction that I've always gone towards, is just blades, just based off of that one failure that I had. But anymore, you know, they don't make. That was when limb-driven rests were kind of first on the up and up, and nobody really kind of knew what they were capable of, or you know, lack of design, or whatever it may be. But now I would say that any limb-driven rest out there, I'd probably have no problem putting them on my bow. Just mentally, I wouldn't be able to shoot one in a tournament just knowing that at some point in time I had a failure with one. Like I said, you know, there's guys out there, Kyle Douglas, Tim Gillingham, those are top-level pros, all shooting drop-aways. Chance Bobeff, again, top-level pro, shooting a drop-away. Those guys don't have a single issue with it. It's just a mental block for me in a tournament setting that I don't feel like I could. Doesn't mean that they're not, you know, they haven't come a long way since then, though.
Yeah. Well, and I guess what you're saying, too, is it doesn't matter which rest you go with, whether it's a blade rest or a fall away rest. It really doesn't matter about that. It's just picking a good quality version of it so that you know that you're going to be successful, and then you don't have to worry about it when you're shooting. And that's kind of why I have migrated to the fall away. It's just, it's less worrisome for me and the flaws that I've got in my form. And I've got, you know, blade rest I'll put on from time to time and see if that form problem is still there. And I can tell pretty quick if I start to get tired or do something things, it's all based on how I grip the bow and I cause it. So it is not the rest fault. It's just a my fault. And so it makes it nice to have those options on the market. So I like them being competitive to each other. I like them so that you can choose and find something really good on the market. And one of the things I guess briefly should talk about is when you go to a competition, you always want to have a spare blade when you're shooting these things, because you're going to snag it on your pants, or somebody's going to mess with it without you knowing about it, or it cracks, you know, just from fatigue. It is spring steel, so they can crack. So you carry a spare or two, don't you, usually?
I do now. I used to not.
Right?
I showed up to Nevada City one year not having any spares. And I had to borrow a pair of pliers and bend it back so that I could shoot the competition. Luckily, I had shot the highest score that had been shot that day. But, you know, had it not been bent, I wonder if I could have shot better, you know? And so after that, I typically try to carry one or two of my I'll try to carry one in my quiver and one in my case, just in case something happens and I lose one or something like that. But I always try to at least keep one or two extra blades with me at all times, just in case, you know, things break. We live in the Pacific Northwest, where everything likes to rust here. I've never broke a blade until I've lived up here. Granted, sometimes I'll leave my bows outside, and that doesn't help because every morning there's mildew or something like that on the grass or something like that. And so I just, yeah, I've broke more blades up here than I ever have anywhere else. So
right. Well,
I carry extras now.
And your experience is the same as mine. You usually never thought about taking an extra blade until you had an incident. And same thing. I snagged mine on my pants one time shooting, and I thought I heard the twang of it springing, but my next shot at 30 yards, my first shot sunk an X, you know, on a at 30 yards on a standard field target. My second arrow, I think, barely caught the bell because I'd bent it up so far and without knowing it. But then it taught me carry it. It's kind of like a spare tire on a truck. If you want a chance to use your spare tire or need a spare tire, all you got to do is go four-wheeling in your truck one time without it, and I guarantee you'll probably wish you had it. You're less likely to have a puncture if you have a spare tire with you.
Yep, exactly.
But I've loaned mine out to I carry some in my quiver on my hip, and I've multiple times at different shoots pulled them right out and given them to somebody that's had a broke blade or had something go wrong that they get hooked up, you know, by me there, but I always have them, so I have a spare too.
Yep, sometimes you catch it with your finger, or there's all sorts of things that you can do to catch those things, and they're not the strongest things in the world, but they do serve their purpose, and they do a good job at it. So
probably the last thing we could talk about today is going to be a little bit of torque tuning. So as we go into, we talked about the position of the rest forward or back. We talked about the blade angle being up or down more. and finding the right setup. We've talked about the stiffness of the blade as well. When you torque tune the bow, I know sometimes you say you have to do it on some of yours. I feel the same way. Every bow, I don't feel like I have to do it. But torque tuning is, let's briefly explain torque tuning and then how you do that when you need to do it.
So the biggest thing, like you said, is some bows need it and some bows don't. I used to think it was based off the geometry of the bow. I shot a deflexed riser last year and had to torque tune my bow, so I found out that that was not the case. It's all bow-to-bow dependent. So that being said, I think it's something that should be experienced with every bow. Once I did it, I helped some guys over in Kennewick last year at the state indoor torque tune their bows, and instantly they saw progress in their setups. And so what you're doing is you're trying to get that rest over the pivot point of your wrist. In that section, even though when you're moving that bow, it looks like it's got the most amount of movement, it actually has the least amount, and that rest stays over your, basically, that pivot point in your wrist, okay? And so basically what you're doing at that point is once you get that back section figured out where that needs to be, then you can start moving your sight in and out. And that's why a lot of people think that they want their sight out as far as you can possibly get it, and that's just better because it's an option. Well, I shoot mine almost in as far as you can get it, and that's just because where I found it to be the most forgiving. And that's why those sights are adjustable is, well, one of the reasons why they're adjustable is to give people options, but two is you can actually use moving your sight in and out to tune your bow. You know, people don't look at it that way, but you know, you think tuning your bow is all rest and cam driven. It's really not. It's an overall picture of everything. I've tuned my bows using stabilizers before. So there's all sorts of different options in it, but torque tuning is just trying to eliminate the amount of torque, or being able to induce the maximum amount of torque into a setup while having the most minimum deflection down range. So I had a bow one time I could derail it almost, and at 80 yards shoot an X.
I'm glad you said that, because what he's not saying is take your bow and pull it back at full draw and then start twisting the riser until something comes apart, because you're going to lose on that every time.
He's
talking about small adjustments in your hand you may feel under pressure, or you may try to, you're trying to work out all the movement in the arrow through your wrist. And if you can move that wrist in or out to help that movement minimize, the better off you are. Now, we've seen people try to torque tune their bows and derail them. And then, so it's not a sketchy world to live in. You just have to be smart about it. It's pulleys, like a well in water. If you pull or whip the string off to one side far enough, it's coming off of the pulley, which is called the cam, right? So you can't put yourself in a winning scenario on that. You have to see at full draw that cam can move right or left, and there's a point where it's too much.
Yep. You're pretty much just grabbing the grip and just twisting just slightly one way or the other. Now, obviously, you don't shoot tournaments grabbing the grip, so if you can get your bow shooting down the center when you grab that grip, that means anything that you do to introduce torque into that system should still hit the middle, so that when you missed because of you, not the equipment.
Right. And so what you'd never want to do with your bow is you don't want to draw it back with your release and an arrow on it and then twist the bow and induce torque and then let the bow down. If you do that with a tight grip and you've got too much torque on it, you'll derail that bow. So the shot process happens so much faster that the cams and the string coming back in alignment if you shoot the shot. So if you're going to let the shot down, you don't feel like it's safe to shoot it, or you don't want to shoot it, you should go back to open hand and take the torque out of it as much as you can, and then let it down with an open hand so that the cams can align with the string better. So when you're shooting that, for indoors, you do it at what distance? I'd assume you do it at 20 yards. Just
20 yards is typically where you torque tune. I've also found that to transpire to outdoor setups too. But typically, like if you're going to do it on an outdoor setup, you want to do it at the farthest distance that you feel comfortable shooting, that you can call your shots. For me, that's 50 yards. So now some people have better shooting abilities than I do or feel comfortable at different distances, but at 50 yards, I feel like I get the same outcome that I would doing it at 80, 90, 100, all that. So, but indoors, everything I ever do to my bow indoors is all at 20 yards, whether that's doing bear shaft tuning or doing rest adjustment where I'm group tuning, torque tuning, all that stuff, testing product, different point weights, doing all that stuff. It's all done at 20 since that's where every indoor tournament's held at.
Right. And so, and to wrap it up, I think what we need to do is you introduced and talked about the sight radius. We have a lot in the Northwest. We have a lot of shooters shooting movable sights for their hunting setup too. So everybody comes in with wanting some type of rail system so they can run it out as far as they can, because they've always heard that sight radius is better, more better, more better. You hear that on everything, more FOC on your arrow, better, more sight radius, better, more distance that you can be accurate, better. And you're right. Just saying kind of the opposite. And obviously you've proven yourself throughout the decades as you do most of your stuff at 20 yards. And then the max you usually do your torque tuning and your other setups is at about 50 yards where you can really call a shot to the accuracy that you need to win tournaments. Yep. So that's a huge thing that we're going to talk about as the spring goes. More is not always better for everyone. I'm like you.
No.
The more sight radius I have, the more movement I see. And then if your brain can't handle that movement and you start to make mistakes because of it, it's best to see less movement. So I suck my sight in for that reason, because I see less movement.
Right. And then you tune your stuff around it. For me, I'm using that as another, like I said, another tuning feature. And that's why they make adjustable peeps, so you don't have to run that sight all the way out so that you can get that perfect peep to scope ratio. Because that's another reason why a lot of people will move that sight in and out, is trying to get that peep alignment. Well, guess what? Specialty Archery, they make adjustable peeps. Hamsky makes adjustable peeps. There's other companies out there that make adjustable peeps so that you can get that perfect peep to scope ratio. So that excuse goes out the window. And now you can really focus on tuning that setup to you instead of worrying about, well, I got to get my peep to scope ratio just right. A lot of times I've shot tournaments where I couldn't even see the ring of my scope. I'm just basically centering the dot in the center and hope that I can see my bubble on most shots, just because, you know, I was torque tuning or adjusting my sight, and that wasn't the case. The other thing is the farther out you have your sight, especially for outdoors, you lose yardage. People think that it's so much better. You know, we're seeing a trend even with people with hunting bows these days. They want these adjustable sights because they want to get that thing out there as far as they can. Well, guess what? You lose yardage having that sight out there all the way. There's a reason why people suck them in all the way. If I have mine out all the way, I got such a low peep height that I can't reach 100 yards to save my life. I got to have my outdoor bow practically the scope right in front of the riser in order for me to hit 100.
Right. Well, and we'll go into that next week as we talk about that setup. Indoors, it won't matter as much on where the sight is on the rail, but it for sure comes into play on outdoors. So I know a lot of people's indoor setup, especially at the pro level, and almost all of them at the pro level, hardly any of them use the same setup indoors as they do outdoors as far as, okay, now I'm just going to switch over to my outdoor arrows and make some small adjustments. They usually are having to move peeps again and do all kinds of things to make it fit the way they want so they can get yardage for the tournaments they're going to go to as well.
And so they just adjust their tuning from indoors to outdoors. But yeah, as far as indoors, like where we're talking about, you know, if you're going to torque tune, you start with the rest, moving it in and out. You'll slowly see that get better. Once you get to a point where you're on one side of the 10 versus the other, that's when you start moving your sight in and out and you really fine tune that. And that's when you can get it to where you're still hitting an X, whether you got that thing ready to derail or you're just shooting your standard grip.
Yep. And so just consider all the things. If you move the rest in or out, you could also accidentally be affecting the elevation. And of course, as you move it backwards, the arrow was, there's more weight in front of the rest now than there was before, so it will cause the impact to change in elevation regardless of if it's the same level or not, because that blade has more force on it now or more weight on it now. So consider one thing that you're trying to fix will cause two or three effects, so don't be frustrated with that And as we start doing our videos, we're going to show some of those things specifically at those distances, so that you can understand that it's okay if your elevation changes when you're trying to torque tune, because you're not trying to fix elevation at that point. You're trying to fix your right and lefts for the most part.
Exactly. It's kind of like when guys come into the shop paper tuning for the first time and they got a high left tear. Well, it's no different than what we tell them. Tackle one tear at a time. So typically you want to tackle your vertical. Well, when you're torque tuning, you want to tackle your horizontal. So if you're trying to work on your left and rights, then you work on your left and rights. The up and down is kind of a byproduct of working on that, and you just have to re-sight in and give your sight a couple clicks after that's done.
Yep. So next week we'll talk about more on the arrow or on the bow sights that are out there. We'll talk about the different target versions of it, and we'll talk about how that still comes into play with the torque tuning that we're talking about and how it kind of finalizes your setup. We'll also talk about, we'll start to introduce anchor points and some releases like Henry was talking about today that will help you understand how the cause and effect continues to go and move. So if you're not willing to put in the time, it's hard to become a really good target shooter unless you're going to dissect these things in the way that we're trying to talk about them and break them down one little piece at a time. And just because you're done with one and you move on to the next doesn't mean you're not going to come back to the other one at some point in time to try to finalize some things about it. You got anything else, Henry?
Nope. If you guys got any questions for us, don't hesitate to reach out to us. We are on Instagram, Archery World Pro Shop. Facebook is just Archery World, or you can reach out to me personally on Instagram or Facebook. Both of them are just underneath my name. We'd love to hear some feedback from you guys, questions that you guys may have. Right now, we're just primarily going over indoor setups just because it is the indoor season. Unfortunately, everything's getting canceled due to COVID, as far as Vegas being canceled / they might be redoing it.
Rethought a little bit or something.
Yep. Unfortunately, we had to move our shoot as well that we were having, the Archery World Classic. Iowa Pro-Am got canceled. Just got news yesterday that the Lancaster Classic got canceled. So we are seeing a trend in the shoots this year, unfortunately, but this might help you moving forward. And with it being the rainy season here, it's not really the time or the place to be shooting outdoors anyways. So we still want to kind of go over this stuff as we move into kind of the better weather. We'll start swinging towards outdoor setups, hunting setups, and just some other common things that you do see out there.
Yeah. Well, and whether it's a fat arrow or a skinny arrow, the reality is most of your legwork and most of your labor is done at 20 yards. So when you get in and you start shooting at your local range, the advantage of that is you're putting in good, consistent shot process over and over and over. And then the distance that you shoot happens to just be the angle you hold your arm for the most part after you get the setup right. So we're planning on doing a lot more of the podcast. We are getting good feedback from people, so continue to send us messages and what you'd like to hear about as the shows go and progress. We're going to start having guests on next week as well. We'll start talking about industry topics. We'll start talking about specific manufacturers, designs, and things that they're talking about with them and other pro staff shooters too. So with that, we'll sign off for now and appreciate you guys listening to us, and can't wait to see what you have to say and ask next.